Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 28th. MISD's Murray, exceedingly happy. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. On Tuesday, Midland ISD President Brian Murray had a chance to reflect on the 2021-2022 school year, and one of the first things that came to mind was he was, quote, exceedingly happy with the growth of the district, especially in elementary areas. Not all performance is where it needs to be, but we are on the right track, Murray said, addressing a question about the review of Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey. Right track is something for a district that came out on the wrong side of the report card the last time the Texas Education Agency provided campus grades. In 2019, those grades were 2 A grades, 2 B-rated schools, 15 C-rated schools, 10 D-rated schools, and 9 failing campuses. Midland ISD leaders have had to stew on that for around 3 years. The lack of performance internally and externally forced the board's hand to make a change that resulted in Ramsey's arrival in Midland. And this change, unlike any Midland has experienced in the last 15-plus years, appears to be delivering results. TEA grades. A big indication of improvement will come in mid-August when the Texas Education Agency hands out campus grades. But like Murray said Tuesday, the anxiety usually associated with the TEA report card arriving in the mail has turned to be the right type of anticipation. Murray said Ramsey has made the necessary changes, starting with turning a central office of administrators into a district service center for campuses. Ramsey made changes to the center's structure and personnel, basically starting anew with leaders in teaching and learning. Murray, the husband of an elementary school teacher, also said new leadership is making a huge difference in how we are viewing academics in the classroom and getting professional development to those at the classroom level. Concepts like achievement zone campuses are giving campuses assets needed to improve, he said, while the 1882 schools, partnership schools like Idea Travis and Houston Collegiate Prep, operated by Third Future, are performing well. In that respect, she has helped the board's vision come to fruition. What's next? Part of the review, Murray said, was about determining areas of focus for year two and beyond. The Lone Star governance model helps give specific criteria to improvement across the board, but it is easy to feel that much of the attention goes to elementary schools. Murray said that more focus will go to the secondary level that didn't see the growth that has been reported at the elementary school level. Midland ISD must get back on track with college, career, military readiness. That means working on partnerships with entities like Midland College when it comes to career and technical education, CTE. It goes back to Midland ISD's mission that all students are prepared and ready for college and career. Quote, that is ongoing, Murray said, about those efforts. MISD hires another principal. New Bonham leader is 10th principal hire for 2022-2023 school year. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Armando Gallegos has been hired as principal for Bonham Elementary. Gallegos' hire was approved by the Midland ISD School Board at this week's meeting. The previous principal, Tricia Turan, was promoted to a position with the Learning, Leading, and Innovation team at the district service center, according to the district. Gallegos is the 10th principal hire for the 2022-2023 school year. Of those, 7 made the move from within the district. Quote, "We are excited about our new campus leaders," Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey said. Quote, "Many came from within our ranks, showing that our efforts to build capacity via efforts like the Aspiring Principals Academy are having the desired effect," end quote. Gallegos holds bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Texas, El Paso, and a doctorate in education from North Central University. He has more than 20 years of experience in the field of education, including serving as a teacher, assistant principal, and middle and high school principal, according to the district. Quote, "I am honored to receive the opportunity to lead a school with such persevering students, an extremely dedicated staff, and a supportive school community," Gallegos said in a press release. Quote, "I feel very fortunate to be part of the school and to support this amazing learning community," end quote. Tulse City Brewing Company talks beer making, future of business. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. In hopes of showing West Texas the beauty behind craft beer, 2 separate entrepreneurial groups set out to file a business name. After realizing they weren't the only ones interested in the hot commodity, Jeff Thomas, Eric and Nicholas Schmidt, and Jared and Joshua Sparks joined forces, creating the hot spot known to Midlanders as Tulse City Brewing Company. Now, with almost 3 years under their belt, Tulse City beer can be found on tap or canned in 50 locations throughout the Permian Basin, giving access to patrons near and far. Quote, "Craft beer usually has a little higher ABV, alcohol by volume, takes a little bit more time and care, and offers a wider variety," General Manager Justin Sparks told the Reporter Telegram. "Although the process matches those of mass producers such as Coors or Miller, the Golf Course Road establishment takes pride in their slower on-site creations and their ability to be creative." The process. First, the beer starts as a base grain, sitting inside a 30 metric ton silo high in the sky on the right side of the flagship. Next, the grain is separated into smaller portions, grinded by a mill, and partnered with other grains depending on the type of beer in question, affecting color, taste, etc. 24 hours later, the mush enters a lauter tun, where additional hot water helps create wort, unfermented beer. Quote, "Once we reach the amount of sugar we want, we'll move it into our kettle. We'll boil it, add hops, and a few other things in there," Sparks said. After boiling, the beer enters a fermentation vessel where live yeast gets the party started by eating the sugars and converting them into alcohol, providing the drink with the desired flavors. The outcome. This process established Tulse City's top 3 sellers and flavors that beer lovers find throughout the Permian Basin: Habub Hefeweizen, 5-Hour Drive Honey Blonde Ale, and Hazeyal Hazy IPA. With 19 options available in the tap room, plus 1 high cider for gluten-free folks, the company continues to push the boundaries by creating new and seasonal beers year-round. Their summer series, Viva Agua Fresca Radler, consists of a hibiscus lime option and a cantaloupe option created through a partnership with Manduhano Brothers Farm. By adding fresh fruit post-fermentation, the beer transforms into a one-of-a-kind experience. Quote, "It has the nice orange hue to it, and since we're using fresh cantaloupe, you can still see a little bit of pulp in it," Sparks said. It's sweet and definitely has that cantaloupe flavor, end quote. The future. With a distribution center established in San Angelo last November, Tall City Brewing Company hopes to keep things moving while making sure staples stay staples and the community feels appreciated. Through hosting events, such as last weekend's Boss Babe Market, the brewery hopes to maintain its relations in Midland and beyond. Quote, we want to show the community that craft beer is an amazing place to come around, bring your family, and know that we want to be a part of the West Texas family. So yes, we serve beer and everything, but that doesn't mean we can't give back and be there for the community, end quote.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read more stories from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, July 28th. Pecos man pleads guilty to possession of child porn, by Mercedes Cordero. A Pecos man pleaded guilty Wednesday to one count of possession of child pornography, according to a press release from the United States Attorney's Office, Western District of Texas. Miguel Angel Ortega, 39, was found to have about 54 videos containing child pornography of prepubescent children on his cell phone. Authorities found the videos on January 4th after executing a search warrant on Ortega's cell phone, according to the press release. Ortega's sentencing date has not been set. He faces up to 20 years in prison. Maybe Foundation gives $5 million to Hogan Park Initiative. From staff reports. The Midland-based Maybe Foundation has given $5 million to the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy in support of the Hogan Park renovation project. This significant gift will bring to life the covered basketball and concessions pavilion located on the northern portion of the park, according to a press release from the Conservancy. Two full-length basketball courts will be highlighted in this area of the park, along with new concession and restroom facilities in that same covered area. On behalf of the Maybe Foundation trustees, via a joint written statement from Maybe Foundation Chairman John Maybe and Trustee Danny Campbell, the J.E. and L.E. Maybe Foundation trustees count it as a privilege and honor to support the needs and quality of life across the Permian Basin with supportive projects like the Hogan Park Initiative. Adjacent to the newly renovated and named Maybe Foundation Pavilion are plans for three sand volleyball courts, a new playground, and five turf multi-purpose sports fields, according to the Conservancy press release. Thank you to the Maybe Foundation board for their generous gift, QOP Board Vice President Jeff Beard said. We are excited to have them be a part of this project in such a large way. The Maybe Foundation Pavilion will be a great gathering spot for recreation and relaxation for many years to come. With groundbreaking for this project scheduled for early 2023, this gift from the Maybe Foundation highlights the excitement from the Permian Basin community as the total fundraising commitments for this project has climbed to more than $36.5 million. QOP Board President Lori Blong emphasized the growing public access to the improved Hogan Park. We believe the Maybe Foundation will be a prime gathering spot in East Midland for families, organizations, and church groups. The Quality of Place Conservancy is thankful for Maybe's shared vision and support of our Hogan Park initiative, and we are eager to see our community flourish in this new facility. Dow, Big Brother Wally on Leave It to Beaver dies. By Andrew Dalton, AP Entertainment writer, Los Angeles. Tony Dow, who as Wally Cleaver on the sitcom Leave It to Beaver, helped create the popular and lasting image of the American teenager of the 1950s and 60s, died Wednesday. He was 77. Frank Bellota, who represented Dow in his work as a sculptor, confirmed his death in an email to the Associated Press. No cause was given, but Dow had been in hospice care and announced in May that he had been diagnosed with prostate and gallbladder cancer. A post on Dow's Facebook page on Tuesday prematurely reported that he had died, but his wife and management team later took down the post and explained that it was announced in error. Dow's Wally was often annoyed, but essentially loving Big Brother, who was constantly bailing out the title character, Theodore Beaver Cleaver, played by Jerry Mathers, on the show that was synonymous with the sometimes hokey, wholesome image of the 1950s American family. Dow was born and raised in the Hollywood section of Los Angeles. His mother was a stunt woman who acted as a double for silent film star Clara Bow, but his parents did not push him into show business. He had done just a little stage acting and appeared in a pair of pilots. After attending an open casting call, he landed his career-defining role as Wally. Dow would play the part for 6 seasons and more than 200 episodes from 1957 to 1963 on primetime on CBS and ABC, then for more than 100 episodes in the 1980s on a syndicated sequel series. Tony was not only my brother on TV, but in many ways in life as well. He leaves an empty place in my heart that won't be filled, Mathers said in a Facebook post Wednesday. Tony was always the kindest, most generous, gentle, loving, sincere, and humble man, and it was my honor and privilege to be able to share memories together with him for 65 years. On the show, Wally, sometimes the center of the plot himself, navigated the worlds of junior high and high school, his two-faced best friend Eddie Haskell at his side, with just a little more wisdom than his little brother. The show's plot line suggested Wally was bound for great things. He mentions wanting to become an aerospace engineer, and he tended to find himself in moral dilemmas that stemmed from his essential goodness. The show was still popular when it went off the air, but it had naturally run its course, with Wally about to go to college and Beaver bound for high school. Dow's death leaves Mathers and Rusty Stevens, who played Beaver's friend Larry Mondello, as the only surviving members of the show's core cast. Beaumont died in 1982. Barbara Billingsley, who played Mother June Cleaver, died in 2010. Ken Osman, who played Haskell, died in 2020. At a time when such disclosures were rare, Dow went public with his clinical depression in the 1980s and made self-help videos on accepting and dealing with the illness. Along with appearances in later years at pop culture conventions, often alongside Mather, Dow worked as an artist, gaining a sterling reputation as a sculptor. One of his bronze pieces was accepted at 2008's Société Nationale des Beaux-Arts, a 150-year-old art show staged annually at the Louvre. Dow is survived by his wife of 42 years, Lauren, son Christopher, daughter-in-law Melissa, and brother Dion. Uvalde principal placed on leave insists school wasn't complacent about security. By William Malhado, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. The principal of Robb Elementary School, who was placed on administrative leave more than 2 months after a mass shooting there, has pushed back on some of a Texas House Committee's conclusions about campus security. In a letter to the House Committee investigating the May 24th shooting, Mandy Gutierrez argued that the door to the classroom the gunman is believed to have entered had a functioning lock, that she was trained not to use the school's public address system during shooting situations, and that there was not a culture of complacency about security at Robb Elementary. It is unfair and inaccurate to conclude that I ever became complacent on any security issue of Robb Elementary, Gutierrez said. The House Committee report pointed to several failures in law enforcement's response to the shooting and issues at Robb Elementary that allowed the shooter to enter the school unobstructed before killing 19 children and 2 teachers. Gutierrez's letter responds to parts of the House Committee report in which she was mentioned. The report concluded that while Robb Elementary's active shooter policy called for classroom doors to be locked, multiple witnesses said employees often left interior and exterior doors unlocked or propped open. School staff didn't reliably receive notices from the Uvalde School's alert system, and some personnel didn't always respond with urgency, the report said. It also noted that the school had unreliable Wi-Fi service, hampering a mobile app alert system. This is the oil page. Saudis set for record hike as risk seen. By Sharon Cho, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus kingpin Saudi Arabia is expected to price its flagship crude to Asia at a record differential for September, even as traders see the scope for a weaker spot market the following month, highlighting a potential turning point for the market. The world's top crude exporter is expected to price its Arab Light crude to Asia at a $10.80 a barrel premium to the region's benchmark for September, loading cargoes, according to a median estimate in a Bloomberg survey of five refiners. At the same time, a slump in margins for Asian processors means that such a hike may dampen any requests for extra barrels, traders said. Global crude prices are headed in July for their first back-to-back monthly loss since late 2020, as investors attempt to price the risks of a U.S. recession, tighter monetary policy, and China's repeated efforts to tame COVID-19. Despite the drop, the oil market's physical signals remain robust for now, with Saudi Aramco set to release its official selling prices for September next week. Some Asian processors have started to mull a reduction in operating capacity from September after running at maximum rates in recent months following the Ukraine war, which upended trade flows and helped boost gasoline prices to a record. Any pullback would carry the potential to soften crude oil demand in the coming months. The bullish momentum for Middle Eastern crude is likely to reach a turning point next month for October loading cargoes, traders who buy and sell those barrels said, citing the market decline in refining margins. Gasoline cracking margins in Asia have slumped more than 70% since late June, while those for diesel sank 39%. The spot premium for Abu Dhabi's Murban crude for October is seen declining at least $1 a barrel compared with shipments loading in September, according to traders. Physical cargoes of September loading Murban crude, favored by buyers in Japan, South Korea, and Thailand, traded at more than $10 a barrel premium in Dubai benchmark in the spot market earlier this month. On Wednesday, Murban crude futures for September slid more than $4 a barrel on the ICE Futures Abu Dhabi Exchange, traders said. Saudi Arabia is the de facto leader of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, which seeks to steer the global oil market by regulating production with allies, including Russia. OPEC Plus, as the wider group is known, meets to assess supply policy next week. Big options bets may fuel bumper discount for Brent by Devika Krishnakumar and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. In a niche corner of the oil options market, traders have quietly amassed a large number of positions, betting that the gap between the world's two main oil benchmarks will keep growing. More than 30,000 positions are open for the rest of the year, wagering the spread between West Texas Intermediate futures and Brent would trade beyond $8 a barrel and even $10. The contracts could compound a recent blowout in the WTI Brent spread, which this week was the widest intraday since crude briefly turned negative in 2020. With several of the options coming into the money or approaching the levels where the bet would be highly profitable, some dealers are being forced to cover their risk by selling the spread, exacerbating the move further, traders said. Many traders took long shot bets starting in late last year that WTI would slump relative to Brent if the U.S. banned crude exports in an attempt to curb surging energy costs and tamp down inflation. The price relationship between the U.S. and global crude benchmarks is a closely watched metric in the oil market since it forms the basis for hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shipments and trades every day. This week, the measure touched $9.75 a barrel as Europe scrambles to replace Russian supplies, while U.S. markets remain cushioned by strategic reserve releases and softer fuel consumption. Before the blip in 2020, the last time the spread traded at such extreme levels was in 2018 and 2019, when severe pipeline constraints trapped barrels in the Permian Basin, the largest oil field in the country. While the spread could be volatile in the short term, once the scheduled releases from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve end, the gap is likely to narrow again, said Giovanni Studenovo, commodity analyst at UBS Group AG. I would expect that we are back at $3 a barrel by December unless they sell more SPR crude, he said. To be sure, as the negative $10 bearish put options have gained in value, some of the positions have been closed out. On Tuesday, about 2,000 such contracts were traded and open interest fell. What to watch for as oil companies start to report second quarter profits, by Kyra Buckley, staff writer. The world's biggest oil companies began reporting their second quarter profits this week, and it's expected to be another multi-billion dollar three-month haul for the majors. For the first quarter, Houston's ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, along with San Ramon, California-based Chevron, each made more than $5 billion while reporting increasing revenues and production. Still, analysts say the companies are operating against a backdrop of chaos. Russia's ongoing war against Ukraine has changed the dynamics of the global energy market, sending oil prices on a roller coaster ride between $90 and $120 per barrel and straining a supply chain already stressed from the pandemic. Additionally, worsening inflation is stoking fears of a looming recession. Amid the unpredictability, London-based Shell is expected to report today. ExxonMobil and Chevron are scheduled to report Friday morning. ConocoPhillips is set to release its earnings on August 4th. Here's what to watch for as the profits roll in. The outlook. When earnings are released, it's less about what happened backward-looking than it is about forward-looking stocks or stories about the future, said Leah Hartman, chair of finance, accounting, and marketing at the University of New Haven. While no company has a crystal ball to see the future, Hartman said, they do have the responsibility to mitigate challenges they're facing and let investors know about them. The tangled global supply chain remains a concern, so listen for how companies have secured equipment and resources and what guidance they're providing to investors moving forward. The R word and inflation. Part of that outlook should include how companies are responding to inflation, which is especially affecting the companies that the majors hire for help at drilling sites known as oil field services. The inflation that we've seen over the past year to 2 years has really been unprecedented compared to previous cycles or previous geopolitical events, said Matthew Fitzsimmons, vice president of energy service research at Norwegian firm Rystad Energy. The three largest oil field services companies last week reported mixed financial results, citing inflation and charges related to swift exits from Russia. The increased costs they're experiencing related to inflation could be passed on to customers, especially for new contracts. Meanwhile, fears of a recession have already been spooking some investors and leading some analysts to warn that demand for oil and gas could drop in the second half of the year. It still remains to be seen if the economy will tip into recession, but companies will likely be communicating to their investors how they're positioned to fare during a contracting economy. The environmental, social, and governance. The industry has been keen on the phrase ESG, short for Corporate Environmental, Social, and Governance Policies, as a catch-all to describe climate change plans alongside other issues that may be important to investors, like workplace diversity. The pressure to meet environmental goals has eased slightly in recent months as Russia's invasion of Ukraine, causing U.S. officials and other world leaders to call on their industry to boost production in effort to make up for Russian oil and gas lost to sanctions. However, a recent Rystad Energy analysis shows companies with measurable progress in meeting environmental and other ESG goals are more likely to attract larger investments and boost their stock price in the long term. Look for how big oil companies make the case to investors of why their ESG plans will contribute to sustained financial health for the business. U.S. oil exports to grow as WTI discount deepens, by Sheila Tobin and Devika Krishna Kumar, Bloomberg. The U.S. is exporting more oil than ever before, with shipments poised to climb even higher. A key factor is the widening gap between West Texas Intermediate and Brent oil futures, which means traders can profit more from each American barrel shipped to energy-starved Europe and elsewhere. The spread this week blew out to a level not seen since 2020, incentivizing exports that are already at a record. Crude shipments climbed 21% last week to an all-time high of 4.55 million barrels a day, while total petroleum exports also hit a record, Energy Information Administration data show. Tight supplies in Europe following Russia's growing isolation have kept Brent oil futures elevated and stoked demand for the U.S. crude. At the same time, releases from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve have kept a lid on WTI prices. Second quarter earnings snapshot, Weatherford, Houston. Weatherford International Incorporated, WFRD, on Wednesday reported profits of $6 million in its second quarter. The Houston-based company said it had profit of 8 cents per share. Losses, adjusted for non-recurring gains, were 11 cents per share. The oil field service company posted revenue of $1.06 billion in the period. Associated Press.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 28th, 2022. Community calendar. City talk. Priorities and concerns on city services, neighborhood issues, and quality of life. These are three main hitters for the city's new public survey tool, launching in late July. By asking Midlanders to rate their experience with different aspects of tall city living, affordable housing, education, transportation, and public safety, the city will be able to measure resident satisfaction and enhance their responsiveness to community concerns. The survey will appear through digital ads on news websites, social media platforms, blogs, and apps. There will also be a link on MidlandTexas.gov. Community events. What better way to support Little Midlanders than with the annual Back to School Supplies Drive hosted by Members Financial FCU? The donation event will run through August 31st and takes contributions of all sorts, pens, notepads, crayons, you name it. Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., 3100 Sunburst Drive. Get ready to party with DoubleTree Hotel's House Party on the Rooftop Shindig. Expect live DJs, body painting, a full bar, and a 360 photo booth. $10 cover charge, 6 to 11 p.m., 117 West Wall. Looking for a midday sweet treat break? Boren Orthodontics will host Bernie's Italian Ice Cream at their practice for a back-to-school summer chill-out for patients and their families and friends, 1 to 5 p.m., 4610 North Garfield, Suite A9. Things to do, see, and hear. Midland Community Theater, Summer Mummers at the Yucca Theater, Friday and Saturday, August 5th and 6th, 12th and 13th, 19th and 20th, and 26th and 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series. Unsweet Teas, Sunday. Windwalker Farms, Show of Supports, Shoot for Heroes, Clay Shoot, Friday. Horseshoe, Midland Gun and Blade Show, Saturday and Sunday. Movies in the Park. All movies start at dusk. Encanto at Hogan Park, Friday, 1201 East Wadley. Pools. Doug Russell Aquatic Center, 900 North Midland Drive. $3 per person. Children 2 and under free. Noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays through Saturdays. Noon to 3 p.m. 4 to 9 p.m. Thursdays. 1 to 4 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. Sundays. Washington Aquatic Center, 1601 East Indiana, $3 per person, children 2 and under free. Noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays through Saturdays. Noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, 1 to 4 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. Sundays. Passes are sold 30 minutes before the posted opening times at the pool and will be limited to a 3-hour period, listed as Session A in the morning or Session B in the afternoon. Monthly meeting, Parkinson's disease, 5:30 p.m. first Tuesday at Mid-Cities Church. For more information, call 432-684-3999. Maverick Players to perform Wedding Secrets. The Maverick Players present Wedding Secrets for 2 weekends at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall. Opening night, Friday. In describing Wedding Secrets, the Maverick Players offered the following. It is the day before the celebration where the families of the bride and groom meet for the first time at the home of the groom. An eccentric uncle lives in the basement. Awkwardness ensues when it is revealed that every member of the wedding party is hiding a secret. This award-winning comedy by nationally known playwright and screenwriter Joe Starzyk is returning to Midland after many accolades and awards for this play. The script of Wedding Secrets was first debuted by director Andy Salcedo in a Reader's Theater competition in 2012 at Midland Community Theater. The comedy won first place. It went on to be presented in full performance at Midland Community Theater, also directed by Salcedo, and various theaters across the country, as well as internationally. The cast includes Craig Loeffler as the groom, his parents, Jane Moore and Daryl Bales, his uncle, Buddy Fazio, the bride, Katie Bales, and the bride's parents, Kim Blackketter and Stretch Werner. In addition are the bride's teenage sister, Vivian Willoughby, the bride's aunt, Charlotte Larson, the teenage boy next door, Garrett Dalton, and Cindy Oglesby as various ladies of the evening. Wedding Secrets performed 7:30 p.m. Friday, 2:30 p.m. Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Monday, and 7:30 p.m. August 4th through 6th by the Maverick Players at the VFW Hall, 409 Veterans Air Park Lane. Tickets are $10. Opening night includes a free wine, beer, and cheese reception at 6:45 p.m. Call 432-260-0044 for reservations. Mid-Des Anime Convention returns to Odessa. Here's a breakdown of everything a person needs to know before attending. What? Mid-Des Anime. Where? Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Tickets. VIP, $99. Weekend, $45. Day long, $35, and kids, $15. Passes can be bought at the door. All convention events will be on the second floor. Some evening activities are 18 and over. Thursday, 8 p.m., VIP and staff mixer, lobby bar. Friday, noon, doors open for VIPs. 12:30 p.m., doors open for general admission. 6 p.m., exhibit hall closes. 7 p.m., artist alley closes. 9 p.m., after party with DJ Origami. Saturday, 10 a.m., doors open for VIPs. 10:30 a.m., doors open for general admission. 6 p.m., cosplay contest. Info and registration found here. 6 p.m., exhibit hall closes. 7 p.m., artist alley closes. 9 p.m., anime rave with DJ Origami. Sunday, 10 a.m., doors open for VIPs. 10:30 a.m., doors open for general admission. 5 p.m., event ends. Celebrity guests and featured events. Sean Chiplock, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Aaron Dismuke, Full Metal Alchemist. Tom Gibbles, Naruto. Sarah Nadocheni, Pokemon. Corey J. Phillips, Fire Force. Erica Schrader, One Piece. Lindsay Seidel, Assassination Classroom. Japanese hard rock metal band Kazha. Nico Squared Maki Cafe. Tickets can be bought here. Comedy Crew, Take One Improv. Live action role play and foam fight with Lore Master. Themed drinks. Ashes Mater Ball. Bourbon blueberry schnapps garnished with mint and blueberries. Dark Magician Girl, citron vodka, sweetened cranberry juice, Cointreau, and lime. Diluc's Searing Onslaught. Fireball, apple cider, hard cider, garnished with cinnamon sticks soaked in high-proof alcohol. The Kingdom of Science. Coconut rum, vodka, blue curacao, pineapple juice, splash of lemon-lime soda, garnished with fresh pineapple and maraschino cherries. Najiri's Wave Motion, gin, white tequila, light rum, vodka, blue curacao. Shikamaru's Shadow Imitation Technique, black vodka, cherry juice, orange juice, maraschino cherry syrup, and a pinch of pearl dust. Yona's Ignition, bourbon, 3 dashes of walnut bitters, 1 dash Angostura, garnished with an orange peel. From Morgan Taylor Thomas. Morrow to Play at the Rusty Bucket by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Texas country music star Corey Morrow will perform at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern Friday. A Houston native, the Texas Tech graduate holds 16 albums and a handful of singles locked and loaded for his Midland appearance. Living all over the state, the singer-songwriter creates snapshots of his experiences through a collaboration of notes and rhythmic genius. Mostly known for his ability to brilliantly and eloquently sing about both Jesus and strippers, the artist remains transparent and entertaining for all involved. His last record, Whiskey and Pride, released in 2018, portrays the two sides of his musical journey. An alcohol and drug-filled beginning followed by a more sober and spiritual latter. Touching on love, self-doubt, and more, the fan-favorite creation reigns as the truest and most honest representation of the musician's career. Relatable for all Midlanders, no matter their background, this show is a must-see. The Rusty Bucket will serve a limited menu according to its Facebook page. Gun and Blade Show, a production by Silver Spur Trade Shows. SilverSpurGunShows.com. New, used, and collectible guns, gun parts, gun accessories, tactical guns and accessories, gun restoration, leather holsters or holders, self-defense, holsters, gun magazines, ammunition, reloading equipment, body armor, cowhides, military collectibles, survival gear, coins, knives of all kinds, knife sharpening, optics, books, t-shirts, concealed carry purses and stuff for the ladies, jewelry, and so much more. At the Midland, Texas, Midland County Horseshoe Arena, July 30th through July 31st. $8 for adults under 12 get in free. Two-day passes are $14, cash only. $1 off NRA or TSRA or military with ID. All law enforcement get into our shows free with their badge. Only one discount per admission. 600 tables. Phone 806-253-1322 for more information.
This is an obituary that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 28th. Lee Jones, beloved husband, father, and grandfather, died on Thursday, July 21st at his home in Bluffton, South Carolina. He was 72 years old. A retired veteran of the United States Army and an American Airlines pilot, Lee was born Harry Lee Jones III in Fort Belvoir, Virginia, on April 30, 1950, to Major General retired Harry Lee Jones Jr. and Gloria Rader Jones. Both preceded him in death. Lee attended Fishburne Military Preparatory School in Waynesboro, Virginia, continuing on to Presbyterian College in South Carolina, where he participated in ROTC and was an active member of the Sigma Nu fraternity. Following in his father's footsteps, Lee served honorably in the United States Army, where he was a distinguished graduate of the United States Army Aviation School. Retired from the Army, Lee moved to Midland, where he served as a corporate pilot, until joining American Airlines as a flight engineer in 1985. He spent the next 29 years as a pilot, earning the titles of captain and check airman, retiring in 2015. Lee is survived by his wife, Laura, daughter Katie Jones Otis, and her husband, Jeremy, their daughters, Aspen and Gracie of Midland, and daughter Abby Jones Davis and her husband, Forrest Davis, and his son, Liam, of Orlando, Florida. His sister, Pat Sullivan, and her children. A memorial service will be held this Friday, July 29th, at 2 p.m. at Saul's Funeral Home in Bluffton, South Carolina. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you consider donating to the Arise Alliance Institute of Tampa, Florida, a foundation started by his family 6 years ago, or give to a charity of your choosing.
Good morning, this is Kim. I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, July 28th. Marquez looks forward to new role. Mauricio Marquez made what he describes as the hardest decision of his career recently. That was to move from principal of Odessa High School to becoming an executive director of leadership at Ector County ISD. Marquez has just completed his 24th year with the district. This is the only district he has been with. All of my experience, all of my service, has been to the ECISD community, he said. Marquez grew up in Monahans and graduated from Monahans High School. He took an associate degree from Midland College. Marquez earned a bachelor's in political science with a minor in history and a master's in educational leadership, both from the University of Texas Permian Basin. He and his wife, Crystal, have two children. Marquez was at OHS for 5 years. Previously, he was at Crockett Middle School for 7 years and Blackshear for 3 years as a principal. Before that, he was an assistant principal at Burleson Elementary and the magnet program director at Ector Junior High. He also taught U.S. and Texas history there. Going into executive leadership was the hardest decision he has made in his career. As I've shared with some folks, my kids, talking about my students, feed my soul. People think I'm crazy because every summer I am anxiously awaiting for our kids to return. So this will be an interesting experience for me. And that, for the last 24 years, I've always reported specifically to a school, and the last 15 years as the campus principal, Marquez said. Now, I'm sure I will be visiting schools day one, but ultimately, obviously, I won't be the campus principal. It hasn't hit me yet. To some degree it has, but not to the fullest extent. I think day one will be definitely when it'll hit me of this new transition for me, he added. So why did he make the decision? It was kind of various people tapping me on the shoulder and telling me to consider this opportunity and being able to have a broader impact in our community, in ECISD, in our system. I can tell you I've been blessed. I really have. I've been blessed that at every school that I've been at, all five, that's Ector High, Crockett, Blackshear, Burleson, Ector, I have truly been blessed that I've worked with amazing individuals. We've had amazing success at every school. That only happened because of the amazing individuals that I've had the pleasure and honor to work with at every school. These last 5 years have been probably one of the most rewarding experiences for me as a high school principal, just because of everything that it entails that comes with being a high school principal, Marquez said. He added that he has been extremely proud of the accomplishments made at Odessa High School these last 5 years. 6 years ago, Odessa High was rated IR by the state of Texas, which was obviously improvement required, and so year one, obviously through working with the staff, we implemented some things that were very beneficial, and we made academic gains in every single area. Matter of fact, we had double-digit gains in many areas, and so year two, we continued making academic gains with our students, and then obviously year three, COVID hit, and so although this year, although scores are not official at this time, we anticipate that our scores are released next month in August, that we're pretty confident that we will be moving up an entire letter grade, he said. That would not have happened if it wasn't for our students, our teachers, and staff being very intentional in supporting our kids. I'm very proud of the fact that we've been able to increase the graduation rate. We've been able to revalidate as a national AVID demonstration school to 2 times during the 5-year span. So I'm extremely proud of all of the accomplishments that we've had as a system. But what I'm most proud of is how we collectively, as an Odessa High Bronco family, have really taken care of kids and all that that entails academically, social, emotionally, through some of the most challenging times, whether it be COVID, whether it be having to come back to school in a hybrid model or virtual learning, Marquez said. Also, during the last 5 years, Odessa experienced the mass shooting. Not only did it impact all of the Ector County community, it impacted Odessa High even more so because of us losing one of our own with Layla Hernandez passing. A lot of challenges that have come in recent years. We've had a lot of success, and so what I'm most proud of is the fact that our staff has stepped up to the plate and really taken to heart about being very intentional in taking care of our kids in every possible way, academically, social, emotionally, and ensuring that their needs have been met. And so, although we've done very well over the years, we also know that there is room for improvement. The school is obviously set up in a way that it will continue to make gains, and so far that I'm indebted to our teachers and staff for the 5 amazing years of having the opportunity to work alongside my team, Marquez added. As an executive director of leadership, Marquez will be overseeing 11 campuses at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. He added that he is looking forward to a new chapter in his life. I'm excited about having an opportunity to impact our ECISD community in a broader way. At Odessa High, obviously, I was directly responsible for 4,000 students and approximately 280 staff members, if you will. In this role, I'll have the opportunity to truly impact the system on a broader scale because now I will be working alongside 11 principals and helping them through their journey to provide the best support to their teams, Marquez said. Although he loved being a principal, he said his new role is really about providing direction and developing people. They have their principal. I will not be the principal. And so my responsibility is in providing direction and developing our principals so that hopefully through that process, they're able to impact their system in a positive way, he said. His hope is that he'll have a chance to go back and say hello to the students at OHS and the staff. I'm sure I will be very busy in my new role, but hopefully one day I'll have the opportunity to just be able to go and visit. I told my kids I don't say goodbye. And like I told my teachers, I don't say goodbye. I tell you until our paths cross again. And even so at graduation, as I told our graduating seniors, just because you graduated doesn't mean that our journeys go separate ways. We will always be here to provide you with support, even though you've already graduated. Odessa High School will always be home to you, and so please know that if you need something, reach out to us because we can still provide support and help because at the end of the day, it's about how we continue to provide assistance and support to the kids we serve in Ector County, Marquez said. Asked if he wanted to become a superintendent someday, he said that is something that he will maybe someday consider. At this time, my focus and energy is to continue learning and growing and doing the best I can in the position that I'm currently in, Marquez said. He added that he never intended to become a principal. I was 18 years old when I knew what I was going to do with my life. I knew I was going to be a teacher and impact kids in a positive way. And the reason for that was because teachers had a tremendous impact on me as a student, Marquez said. I do believe that as a system, especially for many of our kids here in Ector County, we are their only opportunity to truly transform and change their lives through education. Like I told my kids at Odessa High, education is their golden ticket for many of our kids. That is the only way that they can break away from the current situation that they find themselves in. I always tell kids, look, no one decides where you're born. No one gets to choose their parents. You don't go to the local Walmart and exchange them for new ones. What I do tell them is if you truly take advantage of the education system, your life will be transformed for the better, so use the system in a way to truly transform not only your life, but your family's life, because through education, I really believe that it is generational. It will break the cycle for many of our kids when it comes to poverty, Marquez added. Through his journey of being a teacher, a veteran teacher who taught across the hall from him encouraged him during his first year to go back to school and get his master's. She made me the team lead in my first year. I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know what I was doing as a first-year teacher. I said, how do you want me to run my colleagues when they have more years of experience than I do? And she said, you have a gift and you need to go back to school. One day, you need to be running your own school. I actually listened and I went back to school, and that's how I got my master's through that journey. I went back to school and got my master's in educational leadership, and then opportunities came my way. Obviously, I had amazing support and mentors. Martha Mitchell is certainly a person that I give a lot of credit to as far as my career because of her providing me with my first opportunity and really learning from her as my mentor, he said. Mark has added that he has always done the best he could in the position that he was in. I was blessed that people took notice and gave me an opportunity at the next position, if you will. And so God has been good to me that I have had the opportunity to work with such amazing people in this district, he added. Chief of Schools Keeley Boyer said Marquez is extremely passionate about student success. He has successfully led three schools here in ECISD, and we are excited to have him share his experience with our school leaders, Boyer said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.